Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good evening, Northern California. How are we doing?
Good evening.
This is Nigel and my good friend James, Nigel and James Radio Show. Do you know what date it is today? Because I don't.
Today is the 23rd of March, 2022.
And it's a good day. It's starting to feel like Reading. What is it, 87 today?
Is that what it was?
That's not good. That's not bad.
No, you can definitely feel it.
There's some rain coming, supposedly, but I'm loving the warmth, to be honest with you.
Not I.
So we were off last week.
And that was my fault. I apologize. Fault. Yeah, I had another engagement that I doubled and tripled book. You know how I do.
I do know how you do that. The radio show starts at 6, and sometimes you just mosey in at 6:10, 6:13.
You know why? Because I know that it's all in good hands with you, Nigel.
Yeah. Well, do I come across like a well-trained radio broadcaster?
You
I
do.
I don't think so.
No, but you are. You actually you got a compliment from Donnie. She said you do a good job at the interviews.
Wow, that was good.
Yeah. She thought that you
I'll
were
take that.
All the right questions and yeah.
I'll take you're either really good at what you do or you suck at what you do, because I can market either one of those.
Yeah, right.
It's really good. So it's an interesting season. We're smack dab in the middle of election season for Shasta County, and I would say it's getting heated, right? I would say. We go from zero signs to 500 signs to 1,000 signs all across the city, and
yeah, you did see them spring up overnight.
Yep, boink, all of a sudden. It's like bunnies. And so with us, we have Chris Kellstrom. He is running for Shasta County Supervisor District 5, which I think, how many people in that race right now?
There's five of us.
Five. Do you all know each other?
I know two of them pretty well. I'm familiar with the fourth one. The fifth one I do not know, no. But
were you assigned a number?
I wasn't.
You're like, are you one of five? Two of five?
I wasn't. I'm hoping they go by height, but okay, I don't know. Yeah. I mean,
well, then you got, I'm pretty sure I could just say comfortably you got them all licked.
I think so.
So were you second, third, fourth into the race?
I think I was second. I think Barron was, no, actually I was third. I think Colt was in there before me. And actually the other two, I mean, I didn't know that they were in there until finally in March when they kind of finalized everything, and now you know who's in there. So, yeah.
So District 5 is for Les Baugh's seat. Mm-hmm. So okay. Les is done.
I always like to know, so what territory is that?
So it's Anderson Cottonwood, Shingletown, and now Happy Valley.
Okay.
So they've taken Millville out of it. They took little parts of Palo Cedro out of it. They took South. East Reading out of it, Church Creek Bottom, those were all removed. So now it's kind of actually easier because I can just say Anderson, Cottonwood, Happy Valley, and Shingletown.
And where did those others move into other?
Yeah, like so Millville moved into District 3, which is Mary Rickards District.
Yeah.
They kind of moved some things around. I think parts of Church Creek Bottom moved into 2, I believe. Mm-hmm. So
and how does that work? I mean,
you want me to go there? I'll go there. I'd love to tell you that story.
I know it's redistricting, but I mean, like, I find it odd that can just happen. I could imagine at some point with influx of maybe density of population and stuff, things
so
like that, but
that was why it was supposed to happen. So a 2020 census came out, and they had the numbers, you know, compiled them in 2021, so they had the numbers. So my district, District 5, had a few too many people in it. Leonard Modi's district, District 2, had a few too few people in it. The car fire and everything else moved some things around. So basically, you know, the easiest thing to do is you just move some people out of my district into his. And we share lines over, like, in Happy Valley, Igo Ono area, we're kind of sharing a line there. So you'd think it'd be a real simple thing to do. Of course, when you start moving people, you've got fire districts, you've got school districts, you've got water districts, and every time you move somebody, you move them out of their water district and, you know, into a different. So it is a little more complicated than people think, but five supervisors each had a person representing them in the negotiation, so to speak. And then the Register of Voters office, you know, had plenty of people, and they had like 12 meetings over the course of like 3 months. They met every week. And, you know, again, they're hammering out, moving this person here, and we move them over here. Then we have to move this, you know. So they finally came up with two plans, and, they had a plan A and a plan B. And the supervisors took it under advisory, and they said, well, we kind of like Plan A better than B, but it still needs to be tweaked, so we will take it back and make some adjustments. Now, in my humble opinion, Leonard Modi was under recall at the time, so mm-hmm. District 2 was being recalled. Three of the four candidates in District 2 were moved out of District 2 when they did the redistricting. So mm-hmm. Dale Ball's road was literally cut in half, and the half he lives on was no longer in the district, and the other half was still in the district. Two candidates were out in Happy Valley. They moved all of Happy Valley out of the district, so both of those guys were moved out of the district in the middle of a recall. So Tim Garman, who won the election, doesn't live in the district anymore.
So are you saying there was some funny business like, going on?
I'm telling you, Nigel, when you have 12 meetings with a dozen different people that are all there and they come up with two plans and you take those plans and throw them out the window, and it just so happens that a lot of problems got moved around. Bella Vista Water District and Jones Valley Water District have been problems for a number of years now. Those both got moved out of Mary's district into Patrick's district. Les Baugh had some issues down in Churn Creek Bottom. There are some people that weren't real fond of him. Well, that got moved out of his district. Leonard Modi has never done well out in Happy Valley, so the entire Happy Valley got moved out of his district. So it could be just coincidence. I don't
funny
know.
Funny business in politics.
I believe it's, yeah, gerrymandering, I think, is the term. But and it was based on, from what I can tell, it was based on nothing. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, well, this person needs to be in the fire district and this person needs to be in the water. It was just like, okay, here's a plan. Everybody happy with this? All right, let's go with it then. So that's my opinion. I mean, I wasn't in the negotiations, but I thought it was really coincidental that a lot of the problems got moved out of the...
It's funny how coincidences work, huh?
Yeah, and you have several coincidences in a row, you start seeing a pattern maybe, so...
Seems
yeah.
to be a lot of coincidence in the world these days.
Okay, so for those who don't know, why don't you give like a two-minute, three-minute recap or introduction to who you are?
Okay.
Because, yes. Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was born right here, born and raised right here in Redding, California. Went wow. through elementary, high school, the whole bit. I played basketball for Enterprise High School mm-hmm. and Shasta College, 1 year. My dad told me in high school, you ought to go get a job at the grocery stores. So Bocelli Lane, Riverview Market, way back when, for the old timers will know, there was a independent grocery store down there owned by Tommy Reed, walking distance of my house at the time. So I went down there at 16 years old and got a job, and I could finally get rid of the paper route that I'd had for 4 years prior to that.
Were you a bagger?
Oh yeah, but I taught myself pretty much every position in the store other than meat cutter. So I taught myself produce. I taught myself how to
awesome.
You know, throw freight, the whole bit. So by the time I was 19 years old, or at 18, I'd taken a job in Anderson at a grocery store. And by the time I turned 19, about 2 months after I turned 19, I was managing the store in Anderson. So, unfortunately, I got the high school job, and I was really good at it. So, you know, next thing you know, I'm a grocery store manager thinking, well, my friends are going to school and eating ramen noodles and starving to death, and I'm making really good money, so whatever. Yeah. So I was into that for probably about 15 years. Met my ex-wife. She went down to school in Sacramento.
But when you met her, she wasn't your ex-wife yet.
She wasn't my ex-wife yet, no. And actually, I didn't know she was going to become my ex-wife, but, things
another
happened.
Another coincidence.
Another coincidence, exactly. She got redistricted, so anyhow. But she had to go down to Sacramento to go to school. So, I'm a grocery store manager. I'm not going any higher in this chain here. So there's lots of jobs in Sacramento. So we moved down there. She went to school. One thing led to another. Life happens. We ended up spending the decade of the 90s down in Sacramento County. I had a really good job. She couldn't quite get the work up here. So anyhow, we moved back up here. This was always home. We were always here. So we moved back up here in 2001, built a house in Cottonwood. And I'm still there today, so.
So you were actually born here, so you're.
Absolutely.
You are definitely part of the furniture.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And how many generations before that?
So my parents both went to Enterprise High School, too. They both graduated
Enterprise High School.
They
were born here, too?
They weren't born here, no. I believe actually my dad was born in North Dakota, and my mother was born in L.A., or in Southern California, but they moved up here when she was 4 or 5 years old, so.
Excellent. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yep.
Thank you very much. We will be right back. Enjoy some Van Halen.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
And we're back. Good evening on the California, Nigel and James.
Hello.
And we have Chris Kellstrom with us. He's a candidate for Shasta County Supervisor District 5. He was giving us a recap of your life story. So you moved back from Sacramento to Cottonwood.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we were always in Cottonwood. That was home. You know, we were down there temporarily.
What part of Cottonwood?
I live kind of on the north, I guess it would be the northeast side, so.
Okay. Was it Shasta County side?
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course.
Okay.
No, I'm not carpet bagging, so. Definitely Shasta County, yeah.
So at what point did you decide to get into quote unquote public service or government?
You know, actually my first foray into even looking at politics, I mean, it was something that I wasn't really interested in. I got the voter guide, read their statements, look for the right initial next to their name that I wanted to vote for, and you know, I thought I was informed. And it was our first house when we were down in Sacramento County. I finally, after being there 8 or 10 years, and we were just renting because it wasn't home. This was home, and we were going to get back here at any given time. So finally, I was like, you know what? We've been down here 9 or 10 years. We're going to be here 9 or 10 more. Let's just quit renting and throwing our money away. Let's just buy a house. I mean, we're not going to get home tomorrow. So we bought our first house. And there's a big empty field next to it. And I specifically asked before we bought the house, what's going on in that field? And, the builder's like, well, it's just R1, more single family residential, more homes. Okay, are they going to be like our homes in Bennett Compton? Oh, I don't know, they might be. I said, okay. So once all the houses in the neighborhood were sold, oh, lo and behold, city council rezones at R3. They've taken a grant from the federal government, and it's going to be low income triplexes, and I'm sharing a fence with them. So we all went down to the city council meeting. That was my
coincidence.
Yeah, another coincidence, exactly. So
I'm noticing a trend.
I go down to the city council chambers with all the neighbors who, you know, first time in the city council chambers, and I get in there, and it didn't take me long to figure out that, yeah, coincidentally, they'd already taken the money. It was a done deal. They were just waiting for all the houses to sell so that they got the maximum property value out of them, you know, property taxes out of them, and then, oh, we're going to spring this on you now that you've bought your house. So literally, the for sale signs went up and down the road like dominoes, just everybody put their houses up for sale. And I told the ex-wife at the time, I was like, you know what? We're going to have to sell the house. And if we're going to sell it and buy another one, we're not buying another one down here. Our daughter was born. She was about less than a year old, I think. I said, let's just go back home. Let's just make the move and go back home. So, we were able to live down there for 10 or 12 years and we made some great friends. I mean, there's some great people down there, but it was never home. And then once we had our daughter, it's kind of like, we're not going to raise her here. Mm-hmm. We're raising her back home. So it wasn't, you know, a real difficult decision. I mean, I had a great job at the time.
She needed to be a hornet too.
Absolutely. Although she ended up, I don't know what she was Anderson Newtek. I don't even know what their mascot is.
So you mentioned ex-wife, but you are currently married, right?
No.
Not.
Nope.
No, don't you remember that? We found that out last time too. I was surprised. Big, tall, dark, and handsome.
Man on the move, ready to go.
Yes. No. Not married. Seeing somebody, she's great. I know it's very nice to have somebody that's an intellectual equal. So, yeah. But we're old people, so we watch Jeopardy and see who does the best. You know.
When did you decide to put your hat in the ring for?
So 8 years ago, I actually had a bit of a problem with our current supervisor, Les Baugh. Now, I say this hesitantly because, quite frankly, myself personally, I've been extremely happy with what he's been doing for the last year, and I do plan on the first afternoon meeting that they hold that I can actually attend. I plan on burying the hatchet and telling him that keep up the good work until I can get there. But he did kind of upset me about 8 years ago, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to do anything I can to get him out of office. So after that, when he was up for election 4 years later, which is 4 years ago, I was kind of kicking it around then, not really wanting to pull the trigger on it and do it, but I was kind of kicking it around. And Melissa Hunt, who I think was the mayor of Anderson at the time, she's still on the city council. They have rotating mayors. Mm-hmm. Very good friend of mine. And it was just kind of a strange deal where we were at a breakfast together. She came over to tell me bye, and out of the blue, she tells me that she had woke up early in the morning and had been talking to God, and he'd led her to believe that she should run for supervisor. And I'm thinking, oh, hallelujah, I don't have to do it now. And, you know, you're a great candidate. And so, you know, I was great. I don't have to do this now. And then she didn't quite make it. And so I started thinking, well, maybe I should just do it myself. So about 2 years ago, I went and talked to her actually at a dinner, and I said, hey, are you going to run for Board of Supervisors? And she goes, well, I'm not sure. I said, well, if you don't, I'm going to. So she goes, no, great. That would be awesome. You have my blessing. That's perfect. But you might want to talk to Barron. I said, okay. And I was friends with Barron, still friends with Barron. So I went upstairs and saw Barron. I said, hey, are you going to run Board of Supervisors? He says, well, I don't know. I said, well, if you don't, I'm going to. So I'm asking you. He goes, nothing says we both can't run. I said, okay. So I thought, well, you know, I'm not doing anything behind your back. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing anything sneaky. I mean, I'm letting you know that I'm planning on doing it. So it was 2 years ago, basically, that I decided that I'm just going to run. So,
but you got your first taste. When you bought your house, and then you had to go to the council chambers to discuss what was happening next door, when you kind of got the aha moment of how
things work. Exactly. And how those people that I probably voted for, a couple of them, I mean, because I might have voted for the name I recognized at that time.
Yes.
And then I'm thinking to myself, these people aren't representing me. I mean, these people are, they have another agenda here.
Yeah.
That they're doing, and they don't care about me. They don't care about my neighbors. They don't care what they're doing to our property values. And, you know, that, so
I was following you. I just wanted to make sure everybody else was.
Yeah.
So were you anticipating, did you have any kind of inclination of what was ahead of you? Did you anticipate that it was going to be easy, hard, difficult? Did you realize when you started that it was actually about, a lot of it was about raising the most amount of money you could?
Right. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, things lead you to different things in your life, and sometimes you kind of wonder why you're doing them, and then it kind of comes back later like, oh, that's why I got into fundraising. Okay. You know, that's why I did fundraising for, you know, veterans groups and State of Jefferson and different candidates and, you know, all these people over the years. Huh. That's coming in real handy right now. Kind of a coincidence, again, so to speak. But, I mean, there was certain things that you did. I mean, you know, why did I want to manage a grocery store when I was 19 years old? I should have been out, you know, doing a whole bunch of other things than managing a grocery store with multiple employees and several different departments and, you know, everything else at 19. But
it gave you good lessons to do what you're going to do now.
Yep. So there's a lot of things that I did in the past that I didn't really know why I was doing them, but now it's kind of all culminated where it's like, okay, well, hey, you can raise funds. That comes in real handy when you're running a campaign, you know.
So I spent 25 years in LA before I moved up to Reading 12 years ago. And when I moved up to Reading to raise my family, I remember seeing in the newspaper, on the front page of the newspaper, the grand opening of Trader Joe's. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of realized that I was in trouble because, you know, the grand opening of Trader Joe's on the front page of the newspaper.
Huge deal.
Yeah. I'm like, what's going on here?
From L.A., you're like, what?
You're saying it like it's a bad thing. I don't. Where are you going with this?
It's like, no,
not a bad thing, but a nothing.
It didn't take me long to realize this is a small, from L.A., it's a small town.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know how to adjust, but it didn't take me long to realize that everybody, instead of being 6 degrees of separation, there's like one. Right?
So I have...
Or your cousin.
Do we have time? I have a pretty funny story. So I'm on the Chamber of Commerce in Cottonwood, and we have a gentleman that has moved up from Southern California. I mean, great, great guy. Oh my gosh, he is just the biggest blessing to us, and I mean, he is fantastic. But he's from down there. So he comes up to our meeting one night and he goes, hey, in all seriousness, let me ask you guys something, because I'm not from around here. And so sometimes I kind of like to know what's normal and what's not. He says, is it normal for somebody in Cottonwood to like shoot squirrels and skunks in their backyard? And we all, I mean, all the Cottonwood people, we just started dying laughing, you know.
People do that in the garden track.
Right. And we're like, that's pretty normal, Alan. In fact, you get used to it because, I mean, in fact, if they need some help, I'll come over there and shoot a squirrel for them. But I mean, but he's out there, his wife's working in the yard, and all of a sudden the neighbor fires, you know, shoots a squirrel. Yeah. And I mean, and they live in a very nice area with 5-acre lots. I mean, it's beautiful out in the country, but still, there's neighbors, so the neighbor shoots a squirrel, and I mean, from L.A., she ducks to the ground and is screaming, trying to make it back to the house.
Well, it probably rolls. Brings up memories of L.A., because in L.A., when you hear gunshots, you duck and cover.
She roll across the lawn. I'm hit.
So the neighbor comes over and is like, hey, I apologize. I didn't mean to scare anybody. And they're like, well, we're not used to gunshots. He goes, well, get used to them, because I got some squirrels out here. I really need to take care of.
So that's one of the things. But I also noticed that once you go to one, first time I started going to some of these events, and then you go to another one, and it's the same people, and you go to another one, and it's the same people. It's the same clique.
Right.
Well, same, you know, within Redding or Chester County, I would say it's the same clique of 500 to 1,000 people who just go from event to event.
The doers, the goers,
which is fine. But one of the things that I've noticed, in my opinion, like as soon as you, like for you, right, or some of these others who are running, as soon as you put your hat in the ring, you automatically get associated with everybody you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And you immediately get put into a category of either you're a communist,
yes,
right, or you're a right wing nut job, or you're a militia person, right?
Yep.
And so, how have you been with that?
What lane are you in?
It depends on who you talk to. So I mean, I was just going to show you my campaign phone. So I'd gotten onto a hate email list of somebody here in town. So I mean, he just spews hatred day in and day out, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. So you know, according to him, I'm a right wing alt right militia member, whatever. You know, but then. You know, in the meantime, I have some of the Republican establishment is on my pages and not happy with me at all because I'm an outsider and this is not what's supposed to happen. You're supposed to go to all the right parties and talk to the right people and get the right money from the right certain people and do all the things that you're supposed to do, and I'm not doing any of that, so.
I don't know. I just don't know how anybody can stand it. It makes me literally crazy.
It's well, such, James, it's such so, BS. So you would never be good at running for this.
No, I wouldn't. So I just can't tolerate it just drives me mad.
I figure I'm probably hated by the right people right now. You know, I'm on the far right and the far left, and neither one of them like me, which is perfectly fine. It's okay with me. I don't care. So, you know, I'm doing this for the people. I don't really care I don't care if you have an R next to your name or D next to your name. Mm-hmm. If you're on the fringe of either side, well, I'm, you know.
But when people call you something like a militia, I don't understand the whole militia thing, but I mean, I know what they are, but. Isn't there like a registry that you could look up, right? If you belong to a militia, wouldn't that be like public information somewhere?
I think if you call somebody the name long enough, then it just becomes true.
Just what I was going to say, like, are you a militia member?
I am not, actually.
Okay,
I mean,
well, then I would think that if you call somebody a militia member, you should have some type of proof.
True. I'm certainly not a racist by any means. And, you know, I don't get a whole lot of that. I mean, the emails that I get, I'm just part of a chain. So he spews hatred to multiple people.
Yeah.
Not just me.
Okay. So it's an equal opportunity.
Absolutely.
Hater.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was just for you.
Yeah. No. I'm just one of many. And it's kind of ironic because, I mean, some of the people that he hates are on the opposite sides of things. So it's kind of like, you know, of course he hates Revergent Selimo, but then he also hates, you know, Leonard Modi, and he hates, and it's like,
oh, I think I know who you're talking about, actually.
Yeah.
Sounds like just
I think I get person. The I think I get the emails.
Oh, okay, yeah. You're on there too.
And they're unbelievable.
Right.
Like I don't know how he's not in prison.
Yeah.
we have 1 minute left, so how many votes does District 5 need?
I think there's, I'm going to have to go back and look. I think there's like 50,000 people, 45,000 people. So, you know, 50% plus one. Actually, I can tell you how many registered voters is. I'll look on the break. But, yeah, so 50% plus one and you win it in June. You don't have to do a runoff. But with five people in the race, it's going to be pretty hard to get 50 plus one.
That was the end of the second segment. So when we come back, let's do some future casting because we were talking about Ukraine and the
okay.
Look at the shiny light over here and not paying attention to what's going on.
Right.
So let's do some future casting for Shasta County.
Okay.
When we get
yes.
back.
Sounds good.
Thanks. Right. Bye.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
And we're back. Good evening, Northern California. This is Nigel and James. How are you
doing,
James?
Did we come back on the first? Oh, you didn't wait till the second drop.
No, no. But this is a good conversation. We need to get it. We need to get back into this.
Yeah.
Election season. We're back here with Chris Kellstrom, who's running for Shasta County Supervisor District 5.
Five. Yep.
And you know, the last couple of years have been very strange.
Very.
They've also been very real, mm-hmm. right? And one thing I've noticed about you. And I think we're somewhat similar, where it's think globally, act locally, like you pay attention to what's going on globally, right? Because it's such a small world right now. It didn't take much for the whole world to get locked down.
Right.
right? Without a shot being fired.
Almost like a coincidence.
Right? Right? It was kind of funny how, you know, people in Paris were locking down at the same time as Cottonwood. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's something going on there. So, you know, I mean, this was a real thing. Like people's lives were definitely...
Weren't they just testing
really
our compliance, right? See how easy it's going to be for when they want the next big thing?
I kind of sometimes think they were, yeah. I mean, there's, you know, who's going to follow the rules?
So have you noticed how quickly we pivoted from a very dangerous pandemic and
right.
everybody needs to get their ninth booster shot to all of a sudden, hey, Ukraine's in trouble, let's fly the flag for Ukraine.
And let all the booster stuff and the masks go away.
Yeah.
Don't worry about those anymore.
Yeah. So what's your take on that?
So the Ukraine thing, I don't even want to really, I looked at it from if every news media source is reporting the same thing and, you know, and Facebook and the large big tech media is shutting people down with differences of opinions, start looking at those differences of opinions. I think there might be something there. Where there's smoke, there's fire, in my opinion. So,
but we're seeing that now in every way, shape, and form from, you know, I'm not hyper-political, but, yeah, again, like you said, all of a sudden now it's like the pandemic's over, right? Just like blink of an eye. Now all the media is saying Hunter Biden's laptop is true.
Right.
You know, oh, yeah, it's true. I mean, like, how do you,
and there was no biolabs in Ukraine. That's totally ridiculously crazy. Oh, well, there was biolabs. Well,
yeah.
You know, coincidence.
For the last 60 years.
I mean, right. I mean, so again, I've said a long time ago, I don't believe anything the media says, and I don't believe anything my government tells me. And if you take those two things in consideration, it was what can you believe anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I did tell you earlier, I saw a comment from a Ukrainian, a former Ukrainian that said, this is not what's going on. Putin is not the bad guy, and you know, da da da. And of course, those comments were taken down almost immediately. I have seen other comments that are like, no, these are from the Ukrainian people. This is a horrible thing. So again, sometimes I don't know what to believe. I try to get it from the horse's mouth. I've seen the videos of the newscaster doing a story with all the body bags behind him, except one guy's adjusting his body bag because it's not over him, right?
And yeah, he's and alive. Turns out that's from like a year and a half ago.
Right, and you know, and then the bombing pictures. It's like, okay, here's the bomb. Oh my gosh, they're bombing Ukraine. Look at this, this is horrible. And then they show that same picture from 3 years ago or 5 years ago or whatever, and it's like, what in the world? What do you believe? I mean, who yep. do you believe? You know.
So I'm going to say it's the shiny new penny, right? And you've got a logo, look over here. And normally spoken, I would say most people would agree that whatever happens overseas may be not affecting, you know, California or Shasta County specifically.
True.
But whilst we're all paying attention to the shiny penny over there, there's some real stuff going on and coming down the pike in Sacramento. These bills that are within the legislature, that if you're not paying attention to what's going on July, I think it's July 1st, somewhere around there, there's some real,
yeah,
there's some real stuff in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for example, SB 871, which if you're not paying attention, requires all children to be vaccinated for COVID-19 for all public and private schools and daycare starting next school year. So if your school,
private schools?
Yep. So if your kids are in school this year and this passes, starting in August, September, your kids won't be able to go to school unless they're vaccinated, right? So that's on the docket. And there's a whole doozy of them. One that stands out to me is SB 1464, which would require law enforcement officials to enforce public health orders, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a whole slew of things here that if we're not paying attention, especially our local officials, right? Because over the last couple of years, it's been kind of like, I don't want to say rubber stamp, but everybody's been like, yeah, whatever happens, that'll
come out. But there you go, right? We went through this whole thing. They tested us to see how compliant we were, found where there was not compliance, and now they're putting in all these type of orders that make it so that those compliance have to be.
And there's a thing called interposition where a county official, I mean, it's normally done with the sheriff, but can step in between a state or the federal government and say, not my county, not my people in my county. It's been done with the sheriff's office many times. Now, California did take the power of the sheriff. They kind of limited it a little bit. He has to answer to the attorney general, which was never before. The sheriff never answered to anybody. The sheriff, I hear back in the days, in Balma's days, I've heard stories of him coming into his office and screaming expletives, get that blankety-blank governor on the phone right now. And then he would get the governor on the phone, probably Pat Brown back then or whoever, and then just, you know, be chewing him upside one down the other, and the governor would be pleading, I'm sorry, I apologize, you know, and that's how the power that the sheriff used to have. But the sheriff still has a lot of power, and the sheriff can step in between federal governments and in between state governments. He's the highest law enforcement in his county. He supersedes Cal OSHA and, you know, California Highway Patrol and Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's good to be the sheriff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So do you see the sheriff in our county being kind of a stopgap between I mean, so this is just on the docket. It doesn't mean it's going to pass, or some of these things may be removed before then. Who knows? But the fact that these things are even being considered,
absolutely, yeah.
And that they're actually already in your legislature, I mean, it's a shock, right? SB 1479 requires schools to continue testing, tracing, and quarantine. Right? Things like that, right? And some of the AB 2098 would reclassify sharing of COVID-19 misinformation by doctors resulting in disciplinary action.
Unbelievable, yeah.
So there's a whole slew.
Well, and then I just watched, last 4 days, the CDC has made 2 adjustments to the number of COVID deaths in the country and how they're reporting. And they've openly now admits, I think it's like one day it was a 25% drop in deaths that associated with COVID, and then 3 days later they had added an additional 17% drop, and especially in children. And it's like, it for the whole pandemic in the country now, there's less than, I don't know, something ridiculous like 920
1,200 kids in the entire country that now have passed away from COVID.
With COVID.
In any death of any human being is horrible.
So you're telling me, James, that those tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists, crazy people, were actually right?
Yeah. But the thing is like, how many kids in our schools die of all the other things that they contract, from the annual flu to the, you know, odd things that pop up still, even though we have vaccinated them from, that still happen, right? Like, it just happens. That's life. It happens. Life.
Yeah. We have two, I knew of one, but I just heard we have two young, kids in Cottonwood that have leukemia. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And it's horrible. It's horrific. It's terrible. I mean, and you know.
Well, that's not the question. The question when we have conversation isn't about that anybody wants anybody to be sick or ill or die. That's not the point. That's really not even a part of discussion. Children should be able to be born, live in happy places, grow up, be prosperous people, and live their life, right?
Absolutely.
And that's a given. But then don't use it as a tool and manipulation, right? When you're watching the news and you literally feel like there's, you know, millions and millions of people in the country that are dropping dead and children everywhere, and this is just like, that wasn't the case.
No.
Yes, there were a lot of people that died, but there are a lot of people that die from everything that we do every single year, all the time, including just the standard flu that we get, right? And the multiple flus that we have.
So do you anticipate, like, when you started running, obviously, did you throw your hat in the ring before COVID happened or right before it?
I think COVID was happening. Yeah. Cause COVID's been going on for 2 years now. So it was probably a year ago or more that I threw my hat in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But COVID
you started, like, waking up to that, did you say, oh, well, what did I get myself into?
To be honest with you, I was woke up to that day one. I mean, my daughter's a millennial. I love her to death. She's greatest in the world, but she's a millennial and she has a slightly different views than I do on certain things. And
sure.
She was scared to death when this thing came out, and she's like, oh my gosh, Dad, it's so horrible and da da da.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, true. Except, you know, learn to question the narrative.
Yeah.
You know, that's my thing. Learn to question the narrative.
Oh, for sure. But
again,
to be cautious in the initial phase,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, so I Googled influenza deaths.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, there was 90,000 influenza deaths the year before. So I sent that to her, and I said, if you want to be worried about something, be worried about catching the flu, because this kills 90,000 people.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, this thing keeps happening, and they keep blowing up the numbers, and all of a sudden it's millions, and it's like, you know, you're wrong, Dad, because it killed so many more. And it's like, nah, I still disagree. But from day number one, I'm like, this is a farce. This is not,
As far as vaccines, in my perspective, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I mean, I believe that obviously they've done miracles. They've saved millions of people all over the world. COVID vaccines are important, but the whole point again is
choice. Absolutely.
Right? Like, I'm glad that they're there. I'm glad that they made them. And if you feel like you need them, then you get them. It's great. And I you know, and there's this whole thing too about people and the whole thing about, Roe versus Wade and the, you know, choice for abortion and stuff. And the big push on that one side is that this is my body. I get to do what I want. Right? So.
Right.
Why is that not okay for another thing? It's my body. I get to do what I want, right?
And it's the same thing with a mask. I would never tell somebody, you can't wear a mask. Take the mask off. I wouldn't tell them that. And I have a neighbor who I love dearly. She feels more comfortable wearing a mask. Her and her husband both have some, you know, health issues and whatever underlying things.
Absolutely.
Now, personally, I don't say it out loud, but personally, I think it does her absolutely no good. But
you just said it out loud.
I know. Yeah. Well, there's only, you know, just to you guys.
I know.
But no, seriously though, but I mean, I would never tell her, you know, you don't need to wear that mask.
Yeah.
It makes her feel more comfortable. Hey, to each their own.
And again, that's what we talk about.
Yeah.
It is okay.
And it's her choice.
To be in your body, in your headspace, in your mind, and to act and live your life the way that you feel is fit. But live it.
Right.
You don't need to be telling and running around like a mad person, telling everybody else how they have to live.
And that's exactly right. Yeah. And my thing is, I mean, there's placebos that have saved people's lives because they believed in them. I mean, so, you know, if you believe the mask works, let it work. You know,
yeah.
I have no problem.
So
it's power of the mind.
we have 1 minute left, James.
I know.
Just 1 minute for this last segment. But when we come back, I want to ask you Did you anticipate these kind of, I don't know, so legislative issues, but these kind of issues are not your standard issues that were in play, let's say, 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
True.
Where it was all the, you know, the same old stuff, shall we say, mm-hmm. right? All of a sudden, things have shifted, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing certain people, you know, candidates or board of supervisors or city council members, you know, don't necessarily, they're in uncharted territory.
Right.
Right. As far as conversations are concerned. So, thank you very much. We will be right back.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
And we're back. Good evening, Northern California. This is Nigel. James is taking a snack break. We're here with Chris Kellstrom. So let's touch on this. We just started talking about this on the break, right? So we don't really have much to say about what passes, what doesn't pass through the California legislature. But you're saying if we don't follow what they pass, it has an effect on funds coming in to Shasta County from the state?
Coming back to Shasta
coming
County.
Coming back. See, yeah. That's the key word, the key. Right?
Exactly. And that is the key. And our forefathers warned us about this. You know, the forefathers warned us about this with the federal government. But the same thing is happening with our state government. So we collect the sales tax, we collect the property taxes, we collect the taxes here in our county. And then we send them down to Sacramento. And they dole out a certain amount. I used to make round numbers. It used to be 7.5 cents sales tax. So you buy a $20,000 car, you know, at Crown Motors, which I don't think you can get a $20,000 car anymore, but that was the numbers I used to use. So you spend $20,000, you send the $1,500, all goes to Sacramento, and then 1 cent of that 7.5 cents comes back to City of Reading, 1 cent comes back to the County of Shasta. So now you get $200 back to the City of Reading and $200 back to Shasta County, $1,100 stays in Sacramento. And then they dole that $1,100 out with strings attached to it. You know, you can fix that road, but you have to put in a bike lane. You can, you know, fix this intersection, but it's got to be a roundabout. You can, you know, this, that, the other thing. So they dole back the money to us that was our money to begin with, mind you. Now, they claim that we're welfare counties, that we use more tax dollars than we collect. I beg to differ with that, for the simple reason that when you take the 400 different, state offices that they force us to pay for, we need, in my opinion, probably 20 of those. You know, some of the other ones, if we threw it to a vote right here in this room, you know, do we need to pay for, the Department of Homeless Services? Well, they're not doing a very good job, so maybe we could kick that one out. There's a whole bunch of state agencies that I think the three of us would probably agree to that we wouldn't choose to pay for them. So when you take that into account, we collect a lot of tax dollars here. I know I'm overtaxed. I'm guessing you guys are overtaxed. So where is our money going? It's going down to the state. It's being doled back out to us. And I say the money starts here. Instead of you threatening not to give us our money back, how about we threaten not to give you the money to begin with?
Hmm. So having a third grade question here.
What would
happen in that situation?
I know, I was just
if we
say.
Said, hey, you know what?
We might end up in a lawsuit. Then again, we may set a trend. You know, if it was to work, then pretty soon Siskiyou County would be like, hey, I want to do what they're doing. Tehama County would be jumping on board. Pretty soon we'd possibly be a thorn in the side of California enough to the point where, you know, do they want to let us go or do they want to start playing with us? Because we've lost.
We don't want you anymore.
We've lost our representation up here, and we lost our representation in 1964 with a Supreme Court opinion that took the state senators out of the rural areas. So prior to 1964 in Reynolds versus Sims, the state senators. We have 58 counties. We have 50 state senators. Pretty much every county had a state senator. Some of the smaller ones shared a senator. But otherwise, the senators were spread out evenly throughout the county, just like our United States is spread out the same way. It was on the same model. So every state has two senators, you know, whether it's Wyoming with just a few people or whether it's California, New York with millions of people, you still have the same representation in the Senate. That's how our state used to be. We had representation up here in the rural counties in the state Senate. 1964, Reynolds versus Sims changed all of that. So,
what was the logic behind that?
They said rocks and trees don't vote was the logic behind it. It was actually a Republican governor at the time. He was the attorney. He was actually the state attorney general prior to that. Mm-hmm. When they put all the Japanese in internment camps during World War II. So.
Hmm.
Yeah, not the most brilliant man in the world, or at least didn't make really good decisions, in my opinion. But yeah, they changed that, and then that's when we lost all of our representation.
See, I've been paying attention to some of those ideas of, you know, breaking away from California, or splitting California up into different pieces and all that kind of stuff. And for this area, this is me personally. You can correct me if I'm wrong, which I'm sure you will do. But there's one little thing that they won't let go, and that's Shasta Dam.
Yeah, and that actually, you know, that was always the concern, and that's the first thing everybody always brings up. But then when you point out that the Shasta Dam, that's not controlled by the state or the county. That's controlled by the Federal Bureau of Reclamation. Yeah. They're the ones that built the dam. They came up with a contract that we'll build the dam, but we control the water behind it. So the feds still control the water behind Shasta Dam. So even if we were a different state right now, we wouldn't have control of that water.
But that water, the water up here obviously flows south, right?
True. And there may be a conveyance fee
water is
for
the,
that.
Is the new goal.
Hey, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. Ask Mark Twain, he'll tell you that.
That's great.
What about Whiskey Town? Who owns that?
That's a state. That's state, yeah.
Okay. So, Chris Kelstrom with us, Shasta County Supervisor District 5 candidate. So what's coming up with your campaign?
So I have a fundraiser on April 23rd. I'm all self-funded, so, you know, I like to point that out as often as I can because if you look at my financial records, which everything's, by the way, everybody, you should go to the Shasta County Register's office or the Register's webpage, look under campaigns and candidates and campaigns. It'll show you all of our forms there. Anything over $100 has to be the name, the address, the occupation, everything has to be recorded. So you can look at every single candidate and see who's paying for them, seeing who's donating to them.
That's awesome. I didn't even know that.
It really is. And there's $4,900 is the maximum you can contribute to one candidate from one person or entity, business or whatever. So if you look at mine, I've raised more money than anybody else in this race by far, including the entrenched politician with a political background and lots of connections. I've collected more money than him. It's kind of funny, though. You look at mine, and you're going to see 200 here and 300 here and 400 and 500 and very small contribute. I mean, I shouldn't say very small because $500 is, you know.
They're small in scheme, but very
you won't
necessary.
You won't see any for $4,900.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
There you go.
Right?
Exactly.
So little bits all add up.
And mine, I put on fundraisers. You know, we raffle off guns. I became an auctioneer quite suddenly a couple years ago.
Well, you have the voice for it.
Yeah. So I've done auctioneering in Siskiyou County, Shasta County, Tama County, clear down. I did one for Nevada County, which actually we held in Auburn, which is in Placer County, but that was where the venue was. So. But I put on fundraisers. We have live auctions, raffles, you know, the whole bit. We have games. And, you know, it's kind of funny. The article that came out today actually mentioned that my friend that is also running in District 5, a young guy in Cottonwood, he had actually donated $280 to me. Well, he didn't give me $280 because he's a hardworking kid that doesn't have much of a campaign, but he gave me, he came to my fundraiser, and I think he probably bought some raffle tickets, and I think at one point in the live auction, he bought something there. So everything has to be recorded, and you know, so he did spend $100 on my live auction. He did spend another $100 over here and an $80 over here. So, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, but all my contributors, I mean, I like to say it's we the people. It's we the people, and that's who I plan on answering to. I don't answer to you know.
So for the last couple of minutes, let's talk about something positive. Not that you're going to be not positive, but in forward. well, I mean, these are interesting times.
Right? Yeah, no, absolutely.
These are strange times.
They are.
Right? But one of the things that we're trying to do is build a relationships with across the counties.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I think
California Venture District.
And we just had a great meeting with the people in Humboldt over Zoom.
Yeah, we were in a Zoom call like minutes before we had to run over here. Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, trying to move our area forward thinking as far as sustainability and the whole agriculture, agritourism, as we should say, you know, just because our region is, it's a great place to grow food. And one of the things that we're saying is that pretty soon you're going to have to know your farmer.
Yeah.
Right? Because of what's going on with the supply chain issues.
Yeah.
And all that.
Fuel, transportation of food. Yeah, all of it.
So if you was to put your future hat on, where do you see us like 2 years from now as a county?
2 years from now, I'm hoping that we are, yeah, definitely sustainable, that we have a huge budget. I want to take a look at that budget. I think there's room in there to get some things that we need in that current budget. It's scary times because, I mean, I live in Cottonwood, and I'm part of my property is on the Cottonwood, Anderson-Cottonwood Irrigation Canal, the Acid Canal, and I'm hearing that this year they're shutting all the water off. Nobody's getting water in Cottonwood and Anderson.
Why is that?
Because we're in a drought, and that's the powers that be, LAFCO, whoever. I don't know where they came up with the decision, but that's what I'm being told. And so Cottonwood is big on cattle ranching. I mean, that's...
Well, we have a ranch in Cottonwood, and the ACAD runs right...
So you have irrigated pasture.
Into our property,
mm-hmm.
And then dives underneath our entire hay production fields and crosses the creek and then pops back up. So there's a huge culvert under our entire ranch that carries the water to the other side of the creek.
We might be neighbors.
I'm more off Bowman and Evergreen.
Have you shot his squirrels? Are you the one who shot his
squirrels? No, but I would like to.
But we do have cattle, right? But our primary source of income for the ranch to pay for our water rights and our taxes is hay production.
Okay.
So our flood irrigated fields.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, if we're not going to get water.
Are you on the Anderson Cottonwood Irrigation Canal? I don't. Are you?
Oh, well, maybe it's. I mean, I'm assuming. Is there more than one canal?
I don't know because I know that dumps into Cottonwood Creek in. Maybe it goes on down into Tama County, but I thought it dumped into Cottonwood Creek and back into the river. But
I think it does eventually. But
okay.
It comes across our neighbor's ranch, and the canal comes underneath Evergreen.
Okay.
And then comes right onto our property and then dives underneath our property and goes across the creek back out towards Bowman and Evergreen School in that direction.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a scary thing. We do need to get this water situation under control. I mean, we have...
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier. It's like I look at the lake and I'm like, dear Lord... Like, yeah, I thought to myself, there's no way there's going to be able to provide water.
and I talked to
empty.
I talked to a guy that's security up there at night, and he said, he tells me, and because I remember that lake was filling up pretty quick. We had them
in the beginning.
Very, very heavy storms, and I thought it kind of went down rather quickly, and he said they were dumping water out of there. You know, they were dumping
To keep storage space or something?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Possibly to keep a drought going. I mean, there's a little, you know. I mean,
another coincidence.
If you remember right, the governor did not want to declare the drought over as the water's going over the top of Oroville Dam. There's a lot of power in keeping droughts.
Huh.
Well, Mr. Chris Kallstrom, thank you for all the coincidences. I'm glad they all lined up for what you're doing. It's going to be an interesting season.
It will be.
You got four people running with you. So it's going to be an interesting.
Tell everybody how to contribute. What's the best way to
The best way is to come to my fundraiser April 23rd down at the VFW in Anderson. I do have chriskellstrom.com. I have Chris Kellstrom for District 5 Supervisor on Facebook. I don't know if I've gotten any donations off those, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I guess I should probably talk to somebody about that. But, I mean, my thing is I put on fundraisers. Come down to fundraisers. You know, $300, I'll give you 8 dinners and put on a show, and you'll see me in action auctioneering. So
8 nice. Dinners?
Yeah. Wow.
I like food.
Yeah. There you go.
Yes, me know. All right, thank you very much, and we'll see you next
week.
Yeah,
thank you.
Ciao.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.